Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅkhaṃ namassāmi. One of Ajahn Chah's senior disciples, Ajahn Maha Amon, who was a preceptor for many of the Western monks earlier days after Ajahn Chah became ill, and one of the leaders in the Sangha, tells a story of living with Ajahn Chah. And Maha means that he was Maha Amon. Maha means in his name. It means that he had a degree of study in the Pali language, which he. He did. He was both a learned monk as well as a teacher of scriptures and Pali language to others before he came to live with Ajahn Chah. One of the early motivations of him to coming to study with Ajahn Chah was that he had come to pay respects because he'd heard of Ajahn Chah's good reputation. He came to pay respects, and Ajahn Chah kind of said, Tan Maha, addressed him very respectfully and said, you know, we've got a lot of pieces of paper. We study the Buddha's teachings on pieces of paper. We write the exams on pieces of paper. We get the results back on pieces of paper. We have affirmation of our levels of study on pieces of paper that we put up on walls. But really, we just got pieces of paper. He said it's like having pictures of horses. You get pictures of horses you put up around your dwelling place or what. And he says, but you can't actually ride them very far. If you have to go somewhere, they don't really do you much good. So, you know, it's better to have just one real horse rather than a whole bunch of pictures. And similar, he said, with the teachings of the Buddha, we have to learn how to internalize these teachings. We have to learn how to make these teachings become very real rather than just having a lot of pieces of paper. And of course, similarly, ourselves, we've been on retreat for a month now, and I've been reading from the suttas, and it's all well and good, but it's just been reading from pieces of paper. And what's much more important is the how well we've been internalizing those teachings, how well we've been putting them into practice, and how clearly we've been trying to bring them into being in our own practice and in our daily life. Janmahamon also talks about a time when that sometimes in the routine at Wat Bapong, after either the evening or afternoon chores, tea time, sometimes after evening puja, there'd be a group of the monks would gather and chat and talk, and sometimes it'd be useful and sometimes it'd be a lot of speculation and proliferation. And he said one time they gathered and there's a group of them, and they started to, you know, say, well, I wonder what level of attainment Ajahn Chah has. You know, one of us should ask Ajahn Chah, what level of attainment does he have? And they said, well, who'd have the guts to ask? And all of them sort of said, well, we'll have you ask Dan Maha. You can ask. You're the one who's got you've got more knowledge in you than the rest of us, and you can. I'm sure you can talk your way around it. And I said, I don't know. I wouldn't dare ask Ajahn Chah. They said they went back and forth, around. In the end, they never said anything to Ajahn Chah. And then one or two nights after that, as oftentimes happen at Wat Bapong, you gather under Ajahn Chah's kuti, and he said, yeah, there, that group of five or six were there with a few others, and Ajahn Chah was sitting, was talking, chatting, and saying, you know, sometimes people in the village, these villagers, they look at they're farmers, so they're rice farmers, so their life revolves around rice, and they start looking at other people's. It's not a barn in the way that I'm not quite sure what English language what you use, but it'd be like a barn, but it's very small, but it's specifically for putting rice in, and so I'll call it a barn for I can't think of anything else, but it's much smaller and specifically for rice. You know, people start looking at other people's rice barns, and they start thinking, I wonder how much rice so-and-so has. I wonder how much rice he must have a lot of rice. I wonder, but he doesn't have very much rice. And they spend a lot of time proliferating and thinking and talking about how much rice other people have got in their little rice barns. And he says, they can't ever know really without getting in there. And he said, you know, really, it's kind of like us as monks. Sometimes people speculate, you know, I wonder what attainment the teacher has. I wonder what it is. And of course, these monks they weren't looking up. They were. And then Mahamon said, well, they were just keeping their heads down. So Ajahn Chah talked, it was kind of along that theme. How useless it is to speculate on the attainment of others and the different attributes of others. You know, the only thing that we can really know is ourselves and what our own moods and thoughts are, what our own feelings and our own inner qualities. And this is what we can know. And when we do have thoughts and moods of greed, hatred, and delusion, then we have to learn how to free ourselves from that. We have to learn how to undermine, to relinquish those unskillful qualities and moods and thoughts and impressions. And we have to know how to bring into being and maintain that which is associated with goodness, which is associated with peace and understanding, wisdom. And that's what we need to do. That's what our duty is. And because we can see the suffering that our own what we carry around within ourselves, and we can see when we're peaceful and happy, and we know what it feels like. And Ajahn Mahamon started to talk about the chickens in the forest, which is a very common image that Ajahn Chah in particular, and I think most of the forest monks use, because say at Wat Bapong there were these forest chickens, these wild chickens, and they tended and of course Ajahn Chah praising the wild chickens and their qualities and how they eat a little, but they're very watchful, they're very wary. If anybody comes close while they're eating, they'll just fly up into the trees, or they'll get off really quickly. And they're able to fly high up into the trees and roost, and they'll tend not to spend a lot of time close to each other. They'll keep, you know, kind of a flock, but not. They'll give each other space, and said they're very different from the kind of domestic and domesticated chickens, which tend to be bigger, fatter, not able to fly as well, not able to get away. Ajahn Chah said every domestic chicken that got brought to the monastery ended up getting eaten by some of the forest animals. They just don't survive, and they don't know how to get by. And again, this sense of, as practitioners living in the forest, we have to learn how to practice like the forest chickens, not to be eating too much, not to be sleeping too much, not to be spending a lot of time socializing, and putting the effort on the practice and the training, and keeping that simplicity and focus. And this is just the basics of the monastic life, the training of our mind, and so this sense of taking the fundamentals of our life, taking the fundamentals of our living, the basics of eating, sleeping, engaging in socializing, conversation, and keeping it to a minimum so that there's more time for meditation and practice, more time for application of effort. And it's those simple things that keep us on track, that keep us, because all of us are we have an interest in the Dhamma. We've been reading books and studying and practicing and listening to talks, so that we have the knowledge. But it's that focused living of it that is the most important. That ability to bring into being one aspect of the Dhamma really clearly, so that just picking up a theme of contemplation, so reflecting on, and it doesn't have to be anything fancy, just picking up on the theme of impermanence. And recollecting, contemplating, seeing how pervasive. And this is, of course, this is when the Buddha talks about the fundamental characteristics of existence, one of the universal characteristics, anicca, dukkha, anatta. Anicca is the first characteristic, so that contemplating that, and it's translated in different ways of impermanence, inconstant, uncertain, unsure, and all of those have different nuances, which are they're all worthy of contemplation, really. Paying attention to the transient nature and the changing nature of existence, recognizing how our body changes, we have a shared inheritance of human birth, aging, sickness, and death. I mean, that's the kind of the shared inheritance. It's common to actually not just to us as humans, but to all existence. All things come into existence, sustain themselves for a little while, and then they pass away. And during that time, there's constant change, shifting of conditions. Ajahn Chah compares compares the human body to a lump of ice, and especially in a tropical country, and you just put a lump of ice outside. It doesn't matter how big it is; it just starts melting and starts. It's not that long, and it disappears. It's changing all the time and melts away. And yeah, this thing that we call the human body, that we call life, that we identify with as me, it's constantly changing. It's constantly, it's on a fairly constant track on its way to dissolution. Think of when we were younger, and the idea of contemplating somebody, say if you're 20 or 21 or something, and you think of your parents, and they're maybe in their late 40s or something, 40s, and you think, wow, they're really old. And you think of you're 20, you think your grandparents, and I'm 60, what am I, I'm 63 or something. It's probably, what my age, what my grandmother was, who was just seemed just ancient. And as we get older, we think what we are is the norm. And look at younger people and you think, oh, they're kind of strange. What one identifies with oneself. So that is this natural tendency to even though we understand the concept of change and impermanence, somehow the mind keeps changing it's like in a game that a sport or something, you just keep changing the goalposts and you keep changing the rules as you go along so it fits the reality is we need to come back to a real honest assessment of what is this inheritance of this human condition. What is it that we have to deal with? What is it that we have to, what do we delude ourselves with? How do we use the condition as well? So there's lots of themes that are so important for recollection, but that basic contemplation of anicca, anicca satya, the truth of impermanence, the truth of inconstancy. It's so important as a part of both as a wisdom teaching, as sort of understanding the truth, but then also as a means of really laying a foundation for peace and clarity, because it's when we really take it to heart and really see through that, say that nature of things, that somehow it, because when if you just talk about it or if you just think about it superficially, there's that kind of, you should wonder, you know, well, what good is it to be contemplating aging, sickness, and death? I mean, that's a real bummer. That's a real downer. What good could that possibly be? And but it's a curious phenomenon that the, you know, the more willing we are to investigate and internalize that, that there's a quality of clarity and, yeah, confidence, fearlessness that arises. Because there's this amazing tendency of us as human beings to delude ourselves. Ajahn Chah gives that wonderful image of the. Again, he uses a chicken with a, you know, where a chicken is in the village, and the owner comes out every day and brings out food to it, and it's just really happy. It gets its food, it gets looked after. Every once in a while, the owner comes and picks him up, and he said, you know, the chicken is sort of, oh, so I've got such a good life. I get food every day. There's water for me. I get a nice environment, and I've got this really nice owner who comes and just picks me up and carries me and holds me, just really concerned for me. But what the chicken doesn't know is that the owner's coming out and checking how heavy is it now? You know, can I take it to market yet? Is it time to lop off its head, pluck it, and take it to the market to sell? So that's, you know, working on incomplete knowledge. And that's what we tend to do. We live with incomplete knowledge. We make assumptions. And our assumptions are around assumptions of... It's like the classic definition of deranged perception is that one views that which is truly impermanent as permanent, as constant, or that which is truly uncertain and unsure as something that is, you know, quite sure, this is really certain. And overlook that reality of the truth of anicca. So that in our practice, that the contemplation and investigation of impermanence is so important. And it's just, and it doesn't, you know, it doesn't take much to use that as a contemplation. It's just every in-breath and every out-breath is impermanent. Every step we take is impermanent. Every thought in the mind, every feeling that arises is impermanent, constantly changing, constantly displaying that quality of uncertainty. So that to be to be wise to these simple truths, as Ajahn Chah would have said, it's not so important to have lots of pieces of paper with diplomas and degrees and affirmations of knowledge, but to just to have one, at least one solid truth that we can keep returning to, and to use that reflection on impermanence to pay attention to that, as we're sitting meditation, doing walking meditation, to be able to recollect the nature of change. And just by taking the breath as the object, so often we try so hard to make the mind stable and solid and have that consistent mindfulness, which is that effort it's a worthy effort to try to establish a firm foundation of awareness. It's important to try to develop that consistency of attention, but because there is a clarity that arises. But it's also important to not overlook when there is change, when it doesn't follow one's concept of how it should be, and when there's a natural change of the feeling, a pleasant feeling changes into an unpleasant feeling. It happens all the time. As we sit in meditation, and it's both in terms of the physical body, discomfort arises after a while, whether it's a short time or a long time. Just after a while, the nature of the body is that it gets uncomfortable. It changes. Nature of the mind is that even when we are able to establish a sense of real peacefulness and stability and steadiness, clarity, and then it changes. So that rather than seeing that as some sort of weird anomaly, that it's just the truth of the truth of the Dhamma is being displayed. This is the way it has always been. There is this truth of anicca, and to be able to bringing that in, that open ahika dhamma, leading it inwards into the heart for contemplation and investigation, the sense of self, the sense of me being a successful meditator, me being a failure as a meditator. Me gaining something, me losing something, whether it's material or emotional. The world has always, it's the nature of the worldly dhammas, keep revolving around us. It's praise and blame, gain and loss, having some kind of status or repute and falling into ill repute. So that these are natural change. That's the way the world has always been. Aging, sickness, and death have always been the norm. So that contemplation and understanding is. I mean, there's a certain stability that comes from a kind of coolness, peace. Comes from understanding that and internalizing that truth. A real ease, ability to accept the changing nature of the universe we live in. And it isn't just a grudging acceptance or a fatalistic giving up to it. It's just a sense of this seeing and being able to. But there's a real sense of quality of. I think one of the qualities that's important to be recognizing that is a kind of a mirror or a codependent, maybe that's not a good term, but the coexisting with seeing something really clearly in terms of Dhamma is a tremendous sense of gratitude. And that things are impermanent, or that aging, sickness, and death are realities, is not something that is depressing or daunting in any way. The more clearly that it's seen, the more the quality of gratitude arises, and that's a difference between, say, an intellectual concept of sort of intelligently figuring something out, and really seeing it clearly, really seeing it in the light of Dhamma. And that's one of the ways of really being able to gauge for oneself. Am I on track? Is this how is that? Is the practice working? Because that quality of gratitude and the mind being deeply appreciative of just the opportunity to experience one moment at a time, deeply appreciative of the interactions and relationship that one has with others. And it isn't that you force that, but it's a perspective that's important to recognize is integral to seeing clearly, and you know, sometimes it's helpful to do an active reflection on the foundations of gratitude, being able to recognize that. In terms of us as practitioners at this particular kind of time. There's a real sense of gratitude that we have the opportunity to come into contact with the Buddha's teachings, come into contact with the conditions that are incredibly supportive, that are quite stable, really. The vast majority of humans on the planet at this time, one, they just don't have the opportunity to hear and come into contact with teachings of the Buddha, and in being in conditions of just material well-being that allows one the luxury of being able to contemplate and to in a place like America, which is extremely well off, incredible social difficulties and problems that are here is not a supportive condition for many people, but we're fortunate enough to have that opportunity, and it's important to make the best use of it, and to be able to recollect with that sense of gratitude and for ourselves, how to facilitate that, and then how to create the conditions where others can come into contact with that. And it's not a kind of missionary zeal, but it just is a very simple and direct expression of that quality of gratitude again. So that this contemplation of anicca is not just an intellectual exercise. It has to come into the heart. It has to penetrate. And of course, that's what our practice is for. But it's the different aspects and areas of practice. It's not just trying to keep your mind on your breath. It's attitudes of generosity and sharing, attitudes of patience and application of effort, attitudes of relinquishment and renunciation, attitudes of investigation and contemplation. All of these things are form a basis for supporting. Again, you start taking something really simple and looking at it from different angles, different ways of viewing, and saying, "Well, it is simple, but it's not easy." The fact that it's not easy doesn't mean that it shouldn't be done or shouldn't be put effort shouldn't be put forth. The opportunity that we have to benefit from these teachings is it's not to be wasted, not to be looked on in don't overlook, don't look past that opportunity. Use the time and use the opportunity skillfully. So offer that for reflection this evening.